From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour as we come to you from the Pastoral Center here in downtown Sacramento, and have been doing so for, we're now in our 22nd year, and we'd like to thank everyone who has helped us along the way, all our great underwriters, all the great sponsors of the program, if you will, the wonderful guests that we've had over the years, and of course, all of you, the listeners. The most important reason and the reason we do this program is for the listeners, so we appreciate that. And Bishop Wiegand, who was the bishop when the Bishop's Hour was founded, along with Bishop Soto, who's been such a great supporter. And along the way, we had a couple of auxiliaries here as well, the late Bishop Garcia and, of course, Bishop Myron Cotta, who is now the Bishop of Stockton. So we just appreciate everybody and all the support we have had along the way here on the Bishop's Hour. Now, making room for the Holy Spirit, presented by Region 11, making room for the Holy Spirit, a Lenten retreat for parish catechetical leaders will be Saturday, March 13, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Following the death of their friend Jesus, the disciples were downtrodden and discouraged. After this past year, pandemic, racial injustice, political unrest, wildfires, job loss, etc. We also may have a hard time anticipating the joy of the resurrection, which is now just around the corner. However, as leaders, we know that we are called to echo the Easter Alleluia in our words and deeds. At this virtual retreat, we take the time to reflect on the role of the Holy Spirit in our ministry. How can we find the joy and love in our own lives so that we might foster hope and those we serve? The presenter will be Michael Ruzicki, who is from Liturgy Training Publications. The retreat is offered free. To register, go to catholic.formstack.com/forms/Lenten retreat. Again, Michael Ruzicki is the presenter, Saturday, March 13, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., and it's all on the diocesan website as well. Also, the this is from Deacon Kevin Staskow, the director of the Office of Youth and Young Adult Ministry. A number of things coming up. March the 14th via Zoom or YouTube at 6:30 p.m. Navigate Weathering the Storm is a diocesan-wide virtual youth group for all middle school and high school teens to participate in. All teens are encouraged to participate and dive deeper into the Catholic faith and explore its richness. This is a time for teens to find community and fellowship as they learn how to navigate their lives toward Christ. Again, that is will be March the 14th at 6:30 p.m. via Zoom or YouTube. You can contact Anthony Taw. Anthony is at 916-733-0151 or go to ata@scd.org. Again, Anthony Taw, TA, 916-733-0151. Also, Camp Pendola Zoom Hangout, Monday, March the 15th from 4 to 5 p.m. Join us for our free monthly opportunity for campers to gather, catch up with each other, and create a seasonal craft and play a game over Zoom. For March, Miss Naomi will be leading the hangout, and they will be making 3D tissue paper shamrocks and playing Oh Dear, that's D-E-E-R. For more information, contact Jennifer Campbell. Jennifer is at 916-733-0135, or give her send her an email at jcampbell, that's C-A-M-P-B-E-L-L, jcampbell@scd.org. And everything ends at scd.org because that stands for Sacramento Catholic Diocese. Also, a parent support group, Playing Youth Sports as a Catholic, Monday, March the 15th. This workshop will look at the current youth sports climate, focusing on trends and values, both positive and negative. We will explore how parents and adult leaders can help to ensure that our Catholic Christian values are supported in their child's youth sports experience. So wonderful stuff, all kinds of great things happening here in the Diocese of Sacramento. also worship the Lord in the beauty of holiness. This is the liturgy formation series here in the diocese. Fridays, each session takes place Fridays from 7 to 8:30 p.m. and then Saturdays 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. All via Zoom. It is presented by the Diocese of Sacramento Liturgical Commission, the Office of Worship, and the Office of Faith, Family, and Faith Formation. It's a five-part series for liturgy committee members, liturgy coordinators, liturgical ministers, musicians, as well as teachers, catechists, and those who do sacramental preparation. The purpose is to promote the fully conscious and active participation of all the faithful by forming qualified liturgical leaders to achieve beautiful and dignified liturgies according to the teachings of the Church, drawing upon sacred scripture and primary liturgical documents. This series offers a comprehensive introduction to liturgical principles and practices through selected readings, lecture, discussion, and individual projects. Practical application will be emphasized. For more information, contact Laura Lynn Solano. She's at L Solano, S-O-L-A-N-O, just like Solano County, L Solano at scd.org. Or you can give Laura Lynn a call at 916-733-0153, 916-733-0153 for Laura Lynn Solano. And just should be a great program. The first session, March 19th to the 20th, a series overview, introduction to liturgical roots, principles, documents, and practices. Session 2, April 16 to 17, the Liturgy of the Holy Eucharist, Source and Summit of Christian Life. Session 3, May 7th to 8th, Crossing the Threshold, Liturgy and the Sacraments of Initiation. Session 4, June 25-26, Medicine of Mercy, Liturgical Aspects of the Sacraments of Healing. And finally, Session 5, July 23-24, Joy of the Gospel, Liturgy and Service to the Church and the World. Really good stuff. Also, the Diocese of Sacramento Liturgical Commission, the Office of Worship, the Office of Family and Faith will be offering this series. It begins again March 19th to 20th. The cost is just $15 per person, or $50 if you register for all five sessions. Also, another great program here, a retreat, a 2021 retreat for parish vocations committees, missionary disciples. Go and make disciples, for I'm with you always. This annual retreat provides a time of spiritual reflection, growth, ministry tools, and an opportunity for fellowship. If you are not a part of your parish vocation committee and would like to support the Ministry of Vocations, you are welcome to join us Saturday, March the 20th, 2021, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. via Zoom. Please RSVP by Tuesday, March 16th. For questions, contact Maricela Smith. She's at msmith@scd.org. You can also go to scd.org/vocations and learn all about vocations. Or give Maricela Smith a call. She's at 916-733-0258. A lot of wonderful workshops and things going on here in the Diocese of Sacramento. And the Bishop Soder sends this out every month, the wonderful ordination anniversaries. Sometimes it's a really long list, but this month, anniversary ordinations, a much shorter list, March. Father Juan Carlos Villavicencio, March the 17th, St. Patrick's Day. And Father Eugenio Lopez Restrepo, March the 19th, St. Joseph's Day. Father Villavicencio was 2018, and Father Lopez Restrepo was 1984. And a deacon anniversary, Deacon Jacques Yah, was the 7th of March in 1993. So this would be his 28th anniversary as a deacon. And Father Lopez Restrepo is 37th, and Father Juan Carlos Villavicencio, his third. Gabe It's always exciting to see these. I like to see the all the names and all the when they were, you know, how long they've been ordained as a priest. Some of them brand new, some of them for a long time have dedicated their life to Christ and the church.
It's
and,
so interesting.
And dedicated their life to all of us.
Well, so interesting when you see a lot of priests, they're such, it's so obvious that this is what they were meant to do, and it's who they are.
I know who would just openly admit it, but every time I talk to anyone, our longtime priest, our newer priest, they say, I never looked back. It's the best decision. Yeah. It was the best decision of my life.
It's so interesting, though, because you see them, and they're fixtures as to who they are. Like, you go, oh, yeah, that's our priest. And it's people forget that, you know, there was a choice that they made, and they were, you know.
We had Father Memo on, the director of vocations, a couple of weeks ago. And as I've said, a walking billboard for vocations because he's so joyful.
Nicest guy.
And he talked about, you know, you said, I wanted to be rich and famous and be a movie star, and it didn't work out that way. I mean, but he looks back on that and says, I was going down the wrong path. And this was the path God had for me.
It's so funny. He's always like, you walk down the hall sometimes towards different directions in the diocese, and he's right there on down the hall, and he'll you know, you'll see him and say, oh, hey, Father. And then, like, as you're walking down, he pops his head out of us, like, you'll chase, he'll, hey, how are your kids doing? He's just like, how's it going? How's everybody doing? You know, it's like, he's such, and there's no reason for him to do it other than he just wants to. You know, he's just a nice guy.
Yeah, and so many of our priests, a lot of our sisters came over from Ireland, and then, more recently, we've had priests from a lot of priests from Mexico, a lot of priests from the Philippines, and a few priests from various countries in Africa. I think we've got a Polish priest or two.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of
the prerequisite priests Irish priests
grew up in the Diocese of Sacramento. When I was a kid in the Diocese of Sacramento, Irish priest was redundant. It was like Monsignor Coffey and Monsignor Kavanaugh and Father Murphy and Father Kiernan and Father McDermott, and you just go. I'm leaving out hundreds of names, but on and on and on and on. They were all from the old sod.
Yeah, it's interesting when you see, like, when I call different parishes for whatever purpose, and you get a priest on, and you know, you hear the accent or you read their name, and you kind of like, wow, like, you think about the regional reach of the church and of the vocations or like that. It's interesting.
You look at the Mercy Sisters, I believe it was 1858, took a boat from San Francisco up to Sacramento, landed, and that was a Friday, on Friday afternoon, probably right about sunset.
Yep.
By Monday morning, they had a school open.
Yep. I always hear that story, and I get this, like, I have this, like, this vision of, like, you know, these sisters coming in the habit, just hopping right off the boat and going, all right, let's go. Walls are here. Walls go, you know, chairs go here.
And I guess the kids all got an email saying we'll have in school on Monday.
They probably sent it. They probably sent the email, you know, like before they left San Francisco.
It's just mind-boggling, and the priest who used to, the circuit priest who would ride horses from one parish to the next, up in the foothills.
I know.
So it's just,
and the thing is you can't not get there. So if it's snowing, if it's blizzard, if it's raining, pouring down, you still got there.
Very much. Yep.
Yeah, you still got there. So it's pretty. Yeah, it's so funny because it's like, it's such an interesting vocation because you have people who do different things in life that you know involve just whatever, and it's like you don't think about this as a vocation unless it's something you're called to do, and then when it is something you're called to do, like you said, it's like something you can't believe you didn't think to do it to begin with.
Yeah, and it's obviously a vocation that has changed dramatically, obviously with modern times, but it's also a vocation that you can trace right back to Christ and the Last Supper. And, you know, as we approach Holy Week, it is a vocation that is unchanged in terms of its mission, which is to, you know, spread the good news, convert, spread the good news of Jesus Christ, the saving message of Jesus Christ, talk to people about all of it. That mission has not changed since day one. So it's really, really, really remarkable. The anything to do with vocations, we're always very, very interested in hearing people's stories. And I've talked to a number of seminarians, and it's just wonderful to hear their stories. We'll take a quick break here. Back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
Hi, I'm John McGinnis, retired sheriff of Sacramento County, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Sheriff McGinnis, Sheriff McGinnis, for that fine introduction. We're pleased and honored to welcome in our great director of our Catholic schools, the superintendent of schools, Lincoln Snyder. Lincoln, a good day to you.
Good day, Bob. How do you do?
Very good. Are you're not walking around with syringes and needles, are you?
No, I'm actually not at a vaccine site today, so I think this is a first for the first time in a few calls.
Well, how is that going? I know teachers have now been included in the top priorities, which is certainly something I've always felt they should be. How is that going?
Going great. So actually, as of last week, proud to say that we've been able to make a vaccination available to any teacher in the greater Sacramento area that desired one.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's a couple of folks that might have had conflicts or things, and so we're still doing a few last folks. But, as far as our Catholic team, luckily the governor's office has prioritized vaccination for teachers, and the county has certainly been helpful, as well as our good friends at Dignity Health. And so, like a lot of districts, we've been able to get people in a hurry. So we went from wondering when we were going to have vaccinations to having a good percentage of our team vaccinated.
Now, you have schools in, 11 different counties in the Diocese of Sacramento?
Did
any of that vary from county to county? Or sometimes you hear these stories, not necessarily about teachers, but somebody said, well, I qualified in my county, but I made a appointment in a different county, and they said, no, we can't vaccinate you because you don't live here. Have we had any issues like that where it was different rules in different counties?
Yeah, so we have had to kind of clarify rules of engagement with counties. For example, if a school is in Placer County, but a teacher lives in Sacramento County, where do they go?
And right.
Sometimes the county's had two different answers, and so it does take communication. I mean, all of it was in good faith, but you could have two health directors interpreting the same document differently. And it just took working through, and so a lot of my job was advocating, saying, well, as a County X, I'm sorry you feel that way, but if you do that, then my teachers are going to be high and dry, and so could you think of this? And so, we kind of stumbled through as best we could. Like I said, the counties have worked very hard together with our providers like Dignity Health and Urgent Care Now to to increase capacity quickly. I mean, I was at a clinic at Del Campo High School on the weekend of the 20th, and they did 2,400 shots. Jesuit did 2,100 that next day. So they're really scaling up. And the good news is it means that teachers, not just from our schools, but from all schools, are getting vaccinated in a hurry right now.
Yeah, you know, it is difficult in terms of you said, well, I work in this county, but I live in this county, or vice versa. And you go, well, it doesn't make sense to deny it to me because I happen to live over here, because it's those kids I'm facing every day in this county.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the governor's office has been putting a lot of, you know, they've been trying to make it clear that the goal is to make sure that a certain percentage of every clinic is held back for teachers in particular.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that we've seen a real shift in political will and coordination to get kids back in school, not just at, you know, of course, our Catholic schools have been in person since August, September, but getting public school students back onto campus. So, of course, all this legislation about public schools having to serve kids in person by April 1st in the lower grades, K-1-2, is a major step in that direction.
Yeah, and you're right. The political will has changed dramatically in the last month or so.
Exactly.
Some of it, you know, maybe a switch of administrations, but a lot of it is at the local level. Some of it is, you know, pressure from parents, pressure from educators, pressure, and some of it is based on a large amount of it, obviously, is based on the science. You know, that we appear to be in a significant downtrend, and we're getting more vaccinated. Every time I see 5,000 more people vaccinated yesterday somewhere, I go, that's better for everybody.
Absolutely, and it does make a real difference when you figure that if our county has a million people, every 10,000 people is 1% of the county that's done.
Right.
You know, those numbers add up, and it does. You know, of course, we're not out of this yet. You know, I think that as I work with public health, they remain concerned about all these new variants that are out there.
And right.
A lot of things we talked about last time that you know, could we find ourselves seeing a spike because variants are going to come into full effect about the same time that people are traveling for things like Easter break.
Sure.
Yeah, that is the risk. I mean, we just discussed that today with the principals, that we saw a major uptick after Thanksgiving and again at Christmas, and a lot of that was driven by behavior. You know, people, it's not just the act of traveling, but the things you do when you're traveling that we're really asking people to be mindful of.
Yeah, not a whole lot of danger in just getting in the car with a family and going for a Sunday ride. But it's, let's stop and go in this restaurant. Let's stay in this hotel. Or you get on an airplane, or, you know, just more exposures. Or maybe you're going to a athletic contest or, a concert or something. Those things, because they're starting to loosen those things up as well.
Absolutely. You know, we've been very lucky. You know, we have epidemiologists and others that we can consult with through our wonderful Catholic network. And one thing that we've been clear about is, or what we changed in our guidelines, rather, is that, you know, previously after Christmas, we just had an outright travel ban. In other words, we didn't want people going more than 120 miles from their home, and we didn't want them socializing in big groups. We've changed it after Easter, really based on the science, to say, okay, well, it's not driving to Tahoe or driving to Redding that's going to get you into trouble, or driving to LA for that matter, but what you're doing while you're there.
Right.
So for our families coming back to Catholic schools after Easter, you know, what we're really interested in is, you know, have you been in a large indoor gathering, i.e. two or more families of people you don't know, without masks and without distancing, or, you know, have you been around somebody that had COVID? Yeah, I mean, so we, you know, again, we're trying to change our policy to reflect the actual behaviors and not just the act of travel itself.
Yeah. I didn't leave Sacramento, but I did go to a Kings game with 20,000 people. Yeah.
Exactly.
Even though the Kings don't, they're not allowing attendance. But that's the kind of thing you're looking at, like what makes sense here. And it is, you know, and you mentioned Dignity. My experience was just unbelievable with Dignity. I mean, in a very positive sense. I don't like exclamation points, but I'd put some exclamation points after it, because it's they were organized, they were efficient, they didn't give you a date and then change it and cancel it and reschedule, and it was just, man, they had your records right there, I was so impressed with Dignity Health.
Absolutely. You know, and I worked one of the Saturday clinics at Del Campo, where a lot of our teacher friends are going through, and No, really, it was a very well-run event. And our drive-through events at Jesuit High School have been well-run, too, and it's really fascinating to see that, you know, so you can run these things differently. You can do a walk-in, you can do a drive-through. Either way, people are really organizing around doing this right.
Yeah, I like the one where they don't give me a shot, but they put ashes on my forehead.
Yeah, well, of course, we've had some progress on that front, too. I mean, we're very encouraged, of course, to see us being able to return to Mass in different ways in different counties. And, you know, of course, I'm sure you've talked about Supreme Court decisions and changes in tiers. But, yeah, I mean, I think we see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Yep.
And it's not a train.
And it's not a train. That's right.
As we look at this, you know, I've started drafting for next school year something I'm calling the Return to Normal Plan, and really saying, okay, we understand that we're still not going to be able to do all the things we would have done in 2019, but it's sure going to be a much more normal experience than 2020, 2021, if we keep enjoying the success that we are. So what could that look like? So that's really what I'm doing right now, to look past the target of spring and into summer, but really what is fall 2021 going to be like for our students?
Because you were open and virtually all the public schools in the area were closed, did you see an uptick in enrollment?
You know, we have and we have not, and this is a fascinating question, Bob. We had to cap enrollment at some of our schools. And so, for example, St. Francis Elementary downtown, because of the safety requirements with spacing between desks, we've got fewer students at St. Francis than we had last year, even though we've got a lot of people that would love to be at St. Francis.
Oh, boy, you do. I know. Yeah.
Yes, and so, you know, some of our schools where we had capacity were up, some of our schools are down, and some of our schools, our capacity is down a little bit, but we've got a wait list, and people are just waiting to see, can we have the same number of desks next year that we had in 2019, 2020? And our plan right now is yes. We believe that we'll be able to go back. Yes, we believe that once we have a vaccinated teacher population, and knowing that a lot of our parents are going to be vaccinated by the start of next school year, too, certainly anybody that wants to be vaccinated, it appears, will have that opportunity. You know, of course, we're very concerned about our students, but, you know, kids experience COVID differently than adults do. And, you know, we will do everything to continue to keep our kids safe in class, but a lot of the risk is contagion, where somebody gets it at home and brings it to school, or somebody gets it to school and brings it to home. And once we have vaccinated adults and COVID levels are stable and low, we do feel that we'll be able to operate more normally. You know, as Dr. Fauci saying that we'll probably all still be in masks, I think that there's a good chance that those kind of requirements will continue. But I strongly believe that, you know, given what we know today, the 2021-22 school year is going to be a much more normal year and normal experience for our students than this past year has been.
Boy, that would be, it's very hopeful. And, I mean, they're even talking today about everybody who wants a shot getting a shot by the end of May, which is just mind-boggling. I mean,
yeah, absolutely. They're really picking up the pace, and I think that, and we even saw this with the clinics here in Sacramento, that I felt like we couldn't get any movement for forever on teachers getting vaccinated, but once the gates opened, suddenly there was supply available, and we were able to get people through pretty quickly. So, you know, of course, we hope that as they go from tier to tier and production increases, that everybody will enjoy that experience. That you feel like you're waiting forever, but once it's your turn, they're really starting to get people through quickly.
Now, what about the sort of the mandatory / voluntary nature of this? Are people required to be vaccinated, or how does that work?
Well, the state of California does allow employers to require vaccination from their employees, depending on function. You know, for us, like other schools across the state, we have not mandated it for our employees so far.
Right.
I would say the vast majority of employees are opting to be vaccinated. You know, Bishop Soto was vaccinated and made a point of that, you know, we understand that there's some concerns within the Catholic community about some of the vaccines, but...
Right.
You know, I think that, you know, certainly with the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines that our teams have received, I think that there's been a lot of very solid
Yeah, and I would recommend that people read Bishop Soto's statement and read the USCCB statement and the statement from the California Catholic Conference of Bishops about the Moderna and the Pfizer vaccines and their moral acceptability.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're really detailed and explanatory documents. They're not long, but they answer the specific questions that people have.
No, absolutely. And you know, the bigger hope is that obviously for us to reach herd immunity, a certain percentage of people must either be vaccinated or have had COVID. And, you know, one of the things that I think of our kids is what's going to keep them safe when the vaccine has not been approved for kids yet.
Right.
You know, if enough of our adult population buys into the vaccine, of course, it may not be as much of an issue for our kids whether or not they get individually vaccinated because the herd will be there already.
Right.
But, of course, I mean, that takes everybody choosing to vaccinate. So, yeah, I mean, this is something that we're watching really quickly. Okay, as more and more people get vaccinated, how is that playing out in terms of infection rates? And in particular for us in schools, what does this mean for our kids?
Yeah, and Elk Grove High School, the thundering herd, they'll have herd immunity first probably. But, you know, the notion of herd immunity is very interesting, and everything I've read, and I read something, you know, probably from Dr. Fauci recently about, I had COVID, do I need a shot, or do I have the same protection, would I have better protection if I had COVID or if I got a vaccination? And they all answered that you probably have better immunity with a vaccination than you do if you have actually had COVID.
Indeed, and actually, if you've had COVID, you get that much more immunity
if you get vaccinated as well. Yeah,
absolutely. So, yeah, I think that, you know, having seen people go through it, of course, there's some side effects, and a lot of people are a little bit skittish about those. You know, a lot of our friends that have had their second dose have been sick the second day, after the second vaccine. But right. But everybody's gotten through it, and you know, we're going to be sharing with our parents that at schools where, you know, say the faculty's all getting vaccinated for the second time on a given Sunday. Yeah, we may not be able to run school as normal on Monday because people will be out sick, and understandably so. But, you know, we think that in the long run, this is, you know, good for the kids and their parents will understand.
Yeah, I've probably heard two or three dozen stories from, you know, friends, family, acquaintance about second dose feeling woozy or a little bit tired or this or that. But I haven't heard a single one of them say it lasted more than 12 hours or maybe a day.
Indeed. And my 90-year-old grandma had her second shot and made fun of everybody else. She felt fine. So it's not everybody.
Yeah. I didn't have any, and I was shocked. I was prepared to, you know, okay, I got my excuses ready. I'm going to probably get up later and probably be tired and achy, and it didn't happen. I think maybe they just gave me a placebo to keep me quiet. You know, but it varies obviously from person to person, but everybody I've talked to recovered fine from it. You're not hearing, and you know, the thoughts about, you know, being a little bit skittish versus the vast benefits both to yourself, your family, and society in general so outweigh that, you know. And
absolutely.
And it really is unfortunate that it's a double dose, because it does create another roadblock for a lot of people, I think. You know, I just think it does. And it's unfortunate. And, of course, the Johnson & Johnson is a one-shot deal. And
yes, indeed.
But you're probably not gonna have a choice of picking and choosing. No, I'm gonna hold out for the something. No, you're gonna have to take what's offered.
Indeed, you know, in these big clinics, certainly the ones that we helped run at St. Maria Goretti, that was Moderna, and when I was at Dignity Health, that was Pfizer, and Jesuits had both on some weekends. And you know, again, it's very clear the objective is to get people through. And so, but like I said, we know it's quite the effort, but, I mean, the good news for me is I can see it in the data, and I can see it in the, you know, certainly in the faces of our teachers who have had the vaccine, and the relief that it, you know, and the confidence, really, that it builds for them. We can start imagining a world in which we're moving back toward society being more like what it was, and so I think that's a tremendous thing.
Well, you know, the interesting thing, Lincoln, is I was pretty much a rule follower, you know, and you just kind of got used to it, you know, always be masked, and I was very careful about where I go in public and limited that dramatically. And yet, now being vaccinated, I have not changed that behavior at all. It's become so routine that it's not some big burden like, oh, boy, now that I'm vaccinated, I can run up and down the ice cream aisle at the grocery store with no mask, and I can, my behavior has remained relatively stable, which I think is an important thing still until we really get everything under control.
No, indeed, and there's more and more science coming out that, Dr. Fauci spoke to this. It's a family where everybody's had their second vaccine, and so, is it okay to socialize with grandma now that
yep.
she's vaccinated and so am I? And there's a lot of evidence suggesting that yes, but, as far as being out in public, there's still some risk that goes with that, and I think most importantly, even people who have been vaccinated, there's a small chance that one could be a carrier. And,
yeah, right.
A lot of these things will stay in place. I think the important thing, again, to remember is that once a person is vaccinated, their risk of severe side effects, hospitalization or death, basically go away. And having known people that have passed away from this illness, that's a major step for us.
Yeah, they say with the Johnson & Johnson, with the 72% effectiveness, compared to the 94, 95 with Moderna and Pfizer. But they say with the Johnson & Johnson, 100% of those that were the guinea pigs, none of them, not one, ended up in the hospital or dying.
Exactly. And this was even with the nastiest bugs.
Exactly. They were tested later. That's right.
Exactly. So I think all of it is good news. Of course, we still need to find out what's going to be best for kids. Those trials are underway, and we know that there's probably going to be booster shots. But the subtitle of my return to normal protocol is from pandemic to endemic. And I think
good.
This is right, that at some point any disease was new when it started, but it became endemic. So like the way basically the flu or the common mm-hmm. cold is they
sure.
started off as novel sicknesses once upon a time, but now they're just part of what we live with as a society. The hope is that we'll get there and we'll over time be able to get back to all those crazy things we used to do, like sporting events or family gatherings without having to look over our shoulders.
And you touched on it. You mentioned grandma and grandpa. As soon as it seems to be safe, that would be wonderful. Keep them foremost in your mind, because that's a group that, for the most part, they're not going to work every day. They've been shut in throughout this because of the fear of catching it, and then they can't even see their loved ones. It's been a triple burden on them.
Yeah, indeed. And so I can't tell you how excited my grandparents are that they feel like they can. Mm-hmm. They hit the 2-week anniversary of their second dose, and they felt like the world had gotten a little bit easier for them. I mean, they're very relieved, and they're happy just to be able to be around family again.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So you mentioned sports, something dear to my heart. Where are we with sports, with whether it's interscholastic, the PAL, that kind of thing, or the Holy Bowl and those sorts of interscholastics between the high schools?
Well, so the high schools all have their own leagues and their own challenges. Of course, they compete with other schools. St. Patrick, St. Vincent, for example. We have our approved sports. Through Suwannee County, and can't wait to get our kids back out on the field. And we realized we were struggling to find other schools against which we could play.
From different counties.
Exactly. Yeah. So the leagues are all topsy-turvy right now. And just because there was a league doesn't mean that there is a league, even if the sport is allowed. So right. I know that all of our athletic directors at the high school level are scrambling to put together seasons and, of course, do it responsibly and find other teams to play against. So that's all been very, very, very positive, but a little bit of the wild, wild west. But I think everybody understands. You know, and for the PAL, unfortunately, we had already canceled our season. It takes a lot of logistics to put together a sports league for dozens of parochial schools. And
right.
So, you know, unfortunately, we're not going to have that. But what we've been sharing is that we know that now from studies that sharing outdoor sports equipment is safe. And there are a number of sports which are safe. And so, you know, we certainly hope that just because the kids can't play in a competitive league, they can still play pickup baseball or kickball or ultimate frisbee or track and field or a number of things at the school site or, you know, maybe informally. So, yeah, yes, we're limited on getting competitive sports up and running the way that they were just because of timing and logistics. But, you know, kids used to play pickup baseball, and there's nothing wrong with that. So, I mean, spontaneous play is certainly something that we're encouraging at every school.
Yeah, you know, that's a really good point, Lincoln. I remember as a kid, we played sandlot basketball or baseball. And we'd go out to the school playground and shoot baskets on a Saturday. Just a lot of backyard football, you know, back in the day when people had backyards. And, you know, just a lot of playing hide and seek on a summer night kind of stuff. And so often we've gotten now, well, it's got to be organized, it's got to be a league, it's got to have playoffs, it's got to have a state championship, on and on and on and on. And maybe this year, especially like, so you play abbreviated, you only play 4 football games this spring, you know, but we're going to let you play. And maybe some of just the joy of the game, not what did it mean, did this move our ranking up, did this, you know, that kind of thing, it kind of goes out the window, and you go back to just enjoying each game for we're out here in the fresh air and we're playing football against another school. This is great.
Well, and it's interesting, Bob, for our families who had a student graduate from high school before 2006 and haven't had grandkids coming up yet, club sports have become a huge thing.
They're enormous. You're exactly right.
You know, and I think that, I mean, obviously, you know, the families are passionate about it, and the kids are passionate about it, so that's not a bad thing. At the same time, it's, you know, kids haven't played pickup games and spontaneous sandlot ball like they used to, and that's an important skill, too. Not everything has to be an organized competition with coaches and trainers and grown-ups. I mean, kids learn a lot by just going out and playing ball.
Yeah.
You know, be it soccer or baseball or basketball, and no coaches, no refs. They're just playing. And I mean, the things the kids learn doing that are really important, not just the exercise, but the problem solving and the conflict resolution. And, you know.
Yeah, because in most cases, we were doing it without umpires or referees, and there were all skill levels. You know, it was everybody in the neighborhood. Or everybody at the school. We're all, you know, all of us fifth graders, we're going out to the playground and we're gonna play basketball all afternoon. And you kind of made your own rules, but everybody played. And we didn't have a trainer, we didn't have a national ranking. There were no scouts in the stands. There were no stands, you know. And I would estimate, even though I like to joke that sports are my life, that and I was on a couple of teams, but I would think most all of my I bet 90% of my athletic experiences prior to age 18 were, as you described, sandlot, voluntary Saturday afternoon stuff, after school stuff that was not organized.
Absolutely. You know, kids can have activities that don't require the supervision or regulation of adults. And it's a really important thing for them to learn. One of the exciting things about my little town over the last year is watching the kids learn how to go out and fish after school. I never saw kids fishing at the lake after school before March of 2020.
Yep.
And now, I mean, yesterday was just on a walk in the evening, and there was a group of middle school girls that had clearly were right near where the bus stop is in our town, and there's a lake there, and they were fishing.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, it's kind of neat. You know, not everything has to be an adult organizing something for the kids. It's really great when they figure out what they want to do and they learn to do it on their own.
Yeah, I just got a 7-year-old who's near and dear to my heart just sent a photo to our family of she caught a bass yesterday. Said she's 7 years old. She
that's
never
fantastic.
Had been fishing before. You know, and it's funny how they're rediscovering those things, and people are rediscovering hiking and just a walk in the park kind of stuff. It's there's especially look at the area we're in. There is a lot a lot of things we can do outdoors alone, just almost zero risk, but very, very enjoyable, very satisfying. And fortunately, you know, in the spring too, so many even of the organized sports, they are outdoors. They are, you know, for the most part, baseball is about as socially distanced as a game can get, and softball. And, you know, the one thing I was thinking about, though, with track, like say the mile run, and you've got 6 foot social distancing, what you need to do is run real fast out of the blocks, and then nobody can get within 6 feet of you.
Well, I mean, I would have been great in that because I would have been 6 feet behind everybody else more, right? So it would have been the same.
Me too. Same I think I add a zero or two for me behind everybody. <That's it>. Yeah. So it's no. It's so the plan for this fall. What you're hoping to have basically the same number of desks you might have had in 2019.
We are. We're really hoping to have the same number of desks. You know, I'm working with an epidemiologist who's publishes for the CDC. Actually, she's connected to, well, I won't say the local hospital because I haven't asked her permission yet. But yeah, I mean, we're working with serious experts right now. You know, the science is all new. You know, I've talked to the state about how they feel about us putting this together. And, you know, their focus right now is on getting kids back into school. And so they basically said, okay, Smarty Pants, you know, we're not there yet. But if you want to write the plan and submit it, please do. We'd be very curious to see it. So my goal is to get that authored and done before we head off to Easter, just because I think it's really important for us as Catholic schools to communicate to our parents, you know, what they can expect for next year. Of course, we depend on people coming to us voluntarily. We're community schools. We're not mandatory by any means. And, right. And so we just know that our parents are very curious. What could next year look like? And it's really important for me to paint that picture. And because things are continuing to evolve in a positive direction, we're starting to feel much more confident about sharing those expectations.
At some point, do you hope that you don't have to, I mean, presumably you'll still have to offer some at home for those that just, for whatever reason, aren't comfortable going back to in person or not?
Yeah, so you know, we're exploring options for that. You know, this year we've had every school offer either an in-school or at-home option taught by the same teacher.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're thinking that for next year the numbers of at-home will probably be a lot smaller, and so we might actually do a specialized distance school.
Mm-hmm.
So we're having those conversations right now. You know, of course, we want to support our parents the way that they expect to be supported, but, you know, there's advantages. You know, the advantage of having a teacher do dual delivery is that you keep the community together.
Right.
But it's so much work for the teachers that, you know, our teams are exhausted. It's really hard to teach in person and at home at the same time. And as those numbers of at-home kids dwindle to maybe do it in a given class to, you know, one, some of our schools were already down to one or two kids in a class that are still at home, it might make sense just to simply, for the quality of their education experience, to do a specialized distance teacher that would just be working with them
right
full time. So, you know, of course, we can presume or offer options, and, you know, we'll get feedback from the parents. But, yeah, for right now, we're considering more specialized distance school for next year. You know, of course, fully understanding that there may be kids with underlying conditions or other reasons that mom and dad wouldn't be ready to send them back for in-person instruction, and we want to meet them where they're at on that.
Yeah, and clearly, I know one of the first principals I interviewed, and she was telling me about, you know, that the percentage that was still just doing just at home, et cetera. And I said, so you've got a different group of faculty members teaching them? And she said, no, same person's doing both. And I said, man, that's heroic.
It really is. It really is. You know, it's I shared with the principals today that, you know, I used to teach ancient history, and there's this old Greek term from the Greek epics from Homer called aristeia. And aristeia is your moment of valor. You know, that the moment where the hero steps up and really meets the needs of the day on the battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you think of, you know, Hector, Achilles, at Troy, where they have that glorious day where they really just, like have that valorous moment. And then I said, you know, I look back on this year. It's been a year since all this got going.
Yep.
So it was a year ago this weekend that we were at Jesuit High School and found out that Elk Grove Unified was shutting down for 1 week. And I pulled together all the principals and said, you know, what would we do if we had to close for a week or two? Well, we better start getting ready. You know, and a week later, we were in the same boat. And so I said, you know, as I look back on a year, this really was a valorous moment for our teachers. They did things that they never thought they would be called upon to do, and they have really hit it out of the park for our kids. I mean, I couldn't be prouder.
Yeah, the valorous is the right word, and heroic, and there's a whole bunch of other words that come to mind. That if when you look back to then that first meeting, you know, like we may have to do something, or we're going to do something, and of course you were right back teaching by Monday after finding out on or making the decision on Friday. But go back to then, and at that point, how clearly you didn't imagine we'd still be having this conversation a year later.
Yeah, at the time we just didn't know. I mean, we knew that it could be a while. Mm-hmm. I mean, just spider sense told me we've got 1 week to get ready, and because we don't know what's going to happen after that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I just remember that week, like kind of like when you've had a car accident and everything's just kind of in slow motion. That whole week is slow motion for me, Bob, about just preparing and preparing and preparing. And for those first 3 months, I was sending out daily memos to the principals every single morning up at 3:30, 4 a.m., collecting the latest data, talking about what we were doing next. And, you know, just that spring was nuts. But, you know, at the end of the day, we knew that we could do it if we chose to. Mm-hmm. In other words, for me, it was only a question of will. Can we get this done for the kids? Absolutely. Will it be perfect? No. But is it the right thing to do, and will we do it the best we can? Absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, we had technical difficulties and glitches and books, and, I mean, it was chaotic, but wasn't that chaotic. I mean, the kids knew that Friday when they went home, they may not be back the next week, and sure enough, they weren't. So they had their books, and they were prepared, and within a day or two, they were online, and we were moving forward. So I know that there's things weren't able to do this year in terms of what we would normally teach that we wish we could have. But at the end of the day, we have moved every single child forward in their careers as students and certainly spiritually as well.
Yeah,
so
that's
we're
so
very
important.
Proud of the ability to serve.
Yeah, you met your mission. You met your goals. Absolutely.
Yep, absolutely. Yep, so, but time will tell. It always does. We know that there's a lot more ahead of us. But, you know, for right now, I'm just grateful that there are those rays of hope that we're moving on to the next phase of this. And slowly but surely, you know, Spanish flu was crazy in 1918, but, you know, the world came out of it, and we know that this pandemic will be the same.
Somebody dressed in white knocking at my door here with a syringe in her hand. Must be time to go. Lincoln, thanks so much for all you do, and thanks for spending time with us today. I know you're awfully busy right now, but thanks for the great job you're doing and putting all of the kids here in the Diocese of Sacramento just first and foremost.
Hey, always, and thank you so much, Bob. It's always a pleasure being on.
Yeah, take care. God bless. That's Lincoln Snyder, our superintendent of schools, and man, I'll tell you, what a job he and his staff and the principals and the teachers and all our priests that are involved in our parish schools and involved in our high schools, all our nuns that some of them still in the schools, and the parents, on and on and on, and all those great kids in our Catholic schools throughout the 20 counties in the Diocese of Sacramento, and 11 of them have Catholic schools within, and certainly draw from some of those other counties as well. So great job they've been doing. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town, and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org. bishopsradiohour.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Ministry of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates.
To the cross I look, and to the cross I cling. Of its suffering I do drink, of its work I do sing. On it my Savior, both bruised and crushed, showed that God is love and God is just.
Let's go. to my knees and I am